Hi everyone, it's Lydia here. Before we get into this episode, I want to share a little bit of context. To me, the weirdness of the weird years comes from lots of things kind of hitting at the same time. It's when big decisions come to a head. With your career, do you want to pivot or do you want to really keep climbing the ladder? With relationships, are you going to get really serious and take the next step or do you actually want out now? And with kids, it's that kind of now or never question that starts to rear its head. And for our generation, that linear progression that our parents had, it just doesn't really exist. That step by step by step of guaranteed success, it doesn't work out that way for our generation. Ours is more like a kind of meandering path and lots of crossroads, and there's not any definite, okay, this will work out situation. And also, we were really raised as that generation of you can have it all, and there's so much abundance and choice, and that's amazing. But we always kind of forget that with choice can actually come choice paralysis, and it can feel like there's so many different routes and options and ways that we can go down that it's very hard to take the next step. And then on top of that, we've also got this kind of ticking time bomb, whether it's our biology or it's our financial goals. It feels like time is running out and decisions need to be made. It's quite honestly no wonder that we are getting burnt out just trying to get it right. But I guess I'm thinking, what if we just stopped playing by these rules and we just said, actually, no, I'm not doing it this way. And we managed to tune out all of that noise. Like, what decisions would we make? And that brings me to today's guest. Her name is March, and we met through a mutual friend, Monica. You'll recognize the name Monica if you listen to the Unpacking Your Past episode. March is a chronic illness coach, and like herself, the women that she helps, their lives have been affected by chronic illness. The choices that they make, the steps that they make, the path that they've had, their personality and their ambition, it's all been shaped in this context of chronic illness. And because of this, she's faced these really adult decisions much earlier than the rest of us have. She's been making super serious decisions actually since she was a little girl. Her journey hasn't been linear. She hasn't been able to choose every single step of her life. And some of that stuff she's had to navigate around illness. And what this has given her is this unbelievable resilience mindset. And it's not through choice, it's through circumstance. Or maybe it is actually a little bit through choice as well, which we get into in the episode. March is thoughtful and strong, and she honestly has this perspective which just blew me away. Like, she's so young, but she has such a wise, God, I hate that expression, but she has such a wise head on her shoulders. She is so smart and thought out and considered. It's honestly an inspiration. Like, I found this chat an inspiration, and I came away from it feeling a lot lighter and maybe like, God, I'm really dwelling on these decisions and these big thoughts in a way that's maybe a little bit too heavy. If you're feeling overwhelmed, or maybe like you're sinking a little bit in these years, then her story is like a warm pep talk that honestly I think we all need at the moment. So let's get into it. If life feels like a whirlwind of clarity and confusion, pull up a chair. Welcome to The Weird Years. Welcome to the beige couch.
Thank you for having me. I'm
very excited to have you here. This was a rapid turnaround. It was literally on Friday, because I've had you on my hit list for a while. I was like, I need to get March on. I think she's going to drop some interesting thoughts and also some useful thoughts for people. And then saw you on Friday and we've just made it happen.
I don't know. That was very quick.
Yeah.
It's only Tuesday.
I know.
That's amazing of us.
Rapid turnaround.
I'm proud.
Well, I want to kick off for anyone who doesn't know you. If you want to just give me a little overview of what you do, because it's quite a, it's a job that I hadn't heard of before.
Yeah, I don't know how many exist of my job, to be fair. So I'm a chronic illness coach, and I help women predominantly to build mental resilience and confidence so that they can just feel better in their bodies, feel more at home in their bodies after they get diagnoses.
For anyone who doesn't know, can you, is there like a definition of chronic illness? Because I, when I was researching this, I was like, is this thing a chronic illness? Is this a chronic illness? Like, I don't even know.
So it's hard. Chronic illness, as it is defined, is something that persists longer than 3 months.
3 months?
Yeah.
That doesn't feel that long.
I know. So that's where the lines get blurred a bit. And it obviously does differ from person to person. So you'll get people with chronic illnesses that it's kind of incurable, and that's what the word chronic means. But then you see people online being like, oh, I cured my chronic illness by doing this, this, and this. So I think that's where a lot of the frustration with people comes in, is they see people advertising online, oh, I cured my chronic illness. And then there's the confusion going, well, I thought you can't be cured. So that's where the lines get blurred. So I'm sure you researching that, I would understand that too.
Yeah, because I was thinking about this. I was like, oh, I don't know. You know, normally on this, I yap quite a lot about myself and I throw things in. And I was thinking like, I don't even know if I have anything
to add.
I don't have anything to add to this story. I'll just shut the fuck up and sit back, to be honest.
No, not at all. We're going to have a great time.
But I want to start with, as you said, there's not many people who do your job who are chronic illness coaches. Mm-hmm. And I want to just hear a little bit about your story and how you got into that.
Yeah, for sure. So I was born with a syndrome that at birth that affects 5 of the major organs of the body. So I didn't have an esophagus when I was born. So that was like attached and made somehow. Don't ask me how it's so tiny. That I have to have operated on every 4 years now. Wow. Because it doesn't grow with my body. I have 1 kidney. So quite severe scoliosis, which is that curve of your spine. And then I had my left lung removed when I was 11, I think. Yeah, 11. And what else? Oh, yeah. I've got a deformed right thumb as part of the... As part of the syndrome. But basically, I've had these conditions for years, and through my childhood, through my teenage years, it was this constant kind of battle of self-inflicted violence, like the guilt, the shame, the anger, the sadness, all those feelings, and not knowing how to harness them and where to put them, and just being so sad at my situation and realizing nobody else that I knew of was dealing with what I had to deal with day to day. And it was a massive struggle. And then I went after university into like kind of a corporate style job and had quite a bad time within it. And kind of from there, I realized that there was more to life than the corporate world. So I trained as a health and life coach. And then I niched down to chronic illnesses after that. And it's all sort of fallen into place slowly.
Yeah.
But it's coming together.
God, I mean, that's quite amazing that you had that realization that there's more to life at such a young age. But I mean, growing up, you said you had your lung removed when you were 11.
Yeah.
What was that like? Like, because I imagine no one in your peer group, probably no one had even had a bad illness before.
No. Yeah, it was pretty wild. I mean, I was very used to hospitals because I would be in hospital with pneumonia every kind of 2 or 3 weeks, because that was just the nature of what I was having to deal with. And as my left lung kept deteriorating and getting worse over all these infections, they realised it was kind of impacting the right lung, kind of like a cancer. So they decided, my consultant decided, it would be better if we remove the left lung and she'll hopefully be able to live a full, happy, healthy life if we do that. But they didn't tell me they were doing the operation. So I went to hospital thinking I was just going in for my, you know, my normal pneumonia kind of checkups or whatever. And then I woke up with that lung.
Sorry, what the fuck? Because that's what I was about to ask you, is like how much, as a child, obviously legally your parents presumably sign off on operations and things, but it is your body. I was going to ask how much like autonomy you had in your decision-making process of your
health. So they told me on the day, I knew what was happening, but I think when a child, one, has missed so much learning and education in itself and experienced such a high level of trauma, I think it's such a hard one because as the parents, and my sisters are both healthy, you know, healthy girls, and I knew something was going on. I just didn't quite know what it was. And then on the day of the operation, I was told, and I was happy with it. I was so poorly that it was the best solution, really.
Yeah. That's so intense.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think about that. Like, even as an adult, it's kind of mind-blowing to have to make that decision or to have that decision made for you. Until you got to that point, was it always like, did you feel, I mean, you must be an expert, like even scientifically, on all the kind of the challenges and the, you know, the different parts of your body and how these things work. Did you feel really informed, like, on the whole?
I think you grow up a lot quicker. So I was hyper aware of life and spending hours, days, weeks birthdays, Christmases in a hospital bed, you grow up a bit quicker, I think, than maybe everybody else that's developing, learning, growing around you, because you've had to adapt and learn things earlier that you wouldn't wish anybody else to learn, but it's your set of circumstances.
Yeah, that's really interesting. How do you think that shaped the decisions that you made, you know, as you, I guess, aged out of being some, you know, somebody else is making the decisions for you? Do you feel like you went into life with like a really strong sense of self and what you wanted? Or
I'm definitely a very decisive person. If it's, I have a very clear views on good and bad, right, wrong, values. My values are very strong. As a person, I think that kind of the gratitude that I hold for every single day that I wake up, not in pain, not, well, I mean, I'm in pain quite a lot of the time. I am fatigued a lot of the time. But if I'm not in a hospital bed, I'm happy. So it's that kind of gravitas that it brings where you know what bad is and you know what good is. And you, and if it's not bad, the day is good to me. So yeah, I guess it has informed how I navigate the world.
It almost sounds to me like I'm such a like a documentary nerd. I watch everything, and like, and YouTube's actually my documentaries, which I know makes me sound very like uncultured.
What's your fave on YouTube?
Oh my God, this is so dark. And I'm going to be really honest, but it's my weird special subject. I'm like obsessed with 9/11 documentaries.
Oh.
I know.
Niche. I didn't think you were going to say that.
I know. It's so bizarre.
Maybe keep that one to yourself.
Yeah, I probably will edit that one out. Yeah. My best friend will be listening to this and being like, don't fucking talk about that. Because it happens every like 3 or 4 years. Actually, I'm going through a bit of a renaissance at the moment.
Really?
That I will just get super niche into 9/11 documentaries.
Oh, really?
And
what is it about the 9/11 documentaries that you just find fascinating?
It's going to turn to a therapy session. Yeah. Do you know what it is? I think it's partly that my dad used to work in New York.
Okay, so there we go. Okay, we're good. You don't need to explain anymore.
That was pretty much
we'll leave it at that.
Yeah. But I think it reminded me of that in these documentaries that I watch, because often I'm drawn to quite like dark literature or films or documentaries. And often you hear people talking about when you've gone through like a struggle, that kind of gratitude, as you said, of like every day that you're here and you're feeling, you know, okay, not terrible on those days, that's like an immensely life-changing experience. And for a lot of people that happens, that, you know, maybe they have someone they love gets diagnosed with cancer or they lose someone they love. Do you feel like that has just been ingrained in you from such a young age, you couldn't see things any other way?
100%. And it's, I know I infuriate my friends, because whenever I'm with them and we're all having a good time, I always feel the need to say out loud, guys, I'm having the best time right now. And everyone's like looking at me for like the fifth time when I've said it. But it's true. I am so obsessed and happy with the everyday. The smallest things bring me so much joy. And I think that is as well coupled with chronic illness, is you know the lows.
Yeah.
And you know the highs. And when the highs are high, they're so good.
But how do you end up in that point? Because that's something that's always fascinated me with people, is that you get people, amputees are an amazing example, is like you get the people who they have some sort of life-changing situation or condition and they become an amputee, and you get the ones who go and, you know, they're striving to be like in the Paralympics and they're running, even seeing the marathon, you know, recently, there's people running and they're on their running blades and stuff. And then you get some people who, unfortunately, it kind of consumes them and they can't find that like light or purpose.
Yeah.
As a coach, what do you think there's a reason why people go one of two ways?
I don't know if there's a reason, more through lack of, they fear there's lack of choice. And that's not being a reason, but more people don't like to accept that you can change the way that you think, you can change the way that you feel about yourself rather than how your body feels. And that takes practice, that takes time, that takes consciousness. But if you don't have the options presented to you, if you don't care to find them or go out looking for them, if you're not watching the documentaries, like if you think, if I had a repetitive thought over and over and over again every single day, my life is awful, I'm never going to be happy, my body doesn't work for me, I'm a burden. If I'm having those thoughts 70 to 80,000 times a day, which is how many thoughts we have a day.
Wow.
If we're having those thoughts that many times a day, that's then going to affect how I'm feeling in myself.
Hmm.
Whereas if I try and turn it to, yes, my body can be difficult, but I know there are good times. Yes, you know, I know my circumstances are challenging, but I'll do the best to work with them. That is when you're looking at sort of empowering language.
Mm.
Rather than that defeat narrative, that going back to what you're saying about if somebody's an amputee and then they go one of two ways, sadly, that does happen.
Yeah.
But I'm not here to judge either way.
Because everyone has their own journey. That language, though, there's a couple of things linked that really stood out for me then.
Mm.
One of like this kind of defeatist mindset that you mentioned. And also you said that sometimes people don't choose to go after, I guess, a more positive, or people don't choose to accept that they can change the way that they think.
Yes.
And therefore change their life.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a cultural thing?
It's beliefs. It will be your beliefs about yourself, the world, whatever shaped you as a person, then that's what you believe to be true. But it's until we unpack those beliefs that we realise, hey, maybe this isn't serving me in the right way. Maybe this was good for a time, but we need to go back in and reprogram a little bit, shift it, shake it up.
Mm. Do you think there's like a bit of more of a role for tough love than we want to accept? Because I think what's been interesting in the last few years is like empathy, I think, has come a long way in terms of culture. Like people are much more empathetic, even in how we talk about addiction or how we talk about mental health now. It's comes from a place of far more empathy than I think it used to. And I wonder if sometimes it can breed, I guess, a feeling of hopelessness for people in some ways. Of like, I see it, you know, I've seen it with people who will say like, you know, my depression, or like it's as if it's almost a state that is completely unchangeable, which I know for some people it will be. But I wonder if what your thoughts are on that kind of paradigm.
So are you saying that if somebody makes it their identity, that's quite a then hard thing to shift away from?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about it in identity, but yeah.
So I've been having this conversation actually recently. Because I do what I do for my work, I'm talking about chronic illness all the time. I'm talking about how it affects us. I'm talking about the lows, the highs, the tools, the tips, everything, the mindset, acceptance, all those kind of things. But by doing that, I am embodying everything that's on my hospital diagnosis sheet.
Right.
So where I could have had the opportunity to separate the two and not live my diagnosis every day, I've chosen to move towards living it, because I decided that by living it, I was accepting it, I was working with it, we were a strong team, and I'm not sort of trying to ignore it anymore. And so I think it depends on how people want to address whatever situation they're going through.
Did you ever feel when you were growing up that people kind of expected less from you because of your illness?
No.
Not
really. When you say expected less, in what sense?
Well, I've been reading a lot about like the challenges around the education system and how actually it's in response to mainly around like depravity of economic situation. The reality in the UK is now that young white males from low economic backgrounds perform the worst in schools. And there's been a kind of a conversation of, are some teachers being a little like too soft and not expecting anything from them because they presume that they have, you know, a difficult home situation, and rather than being like, you know, you have a difficult home situation, but this is how we can move forward.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, oh, well, you know, they've got that going on. We'll sort of let them off the hook. And I wonder if you ever felt, I don't know if patronized the word or like, yeah, like people just thought you weren't able to do things.
Well, I guess, yeah, it's that feeling of, I felt very different. But I was in a school where no one was different. So I think it's obviously changed. The education system's changed a lot since my time in education.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it was probably quite old school, and being the only, I didn't even identify someone that was disabled until I was 21, 22. Whereas I should have known. I wish I'd known what having a disability meant at the age of 11 when I did become disabled. So I guess it's that, but also, yeah, different teachers were different for different reasons, but I missed so much school, like years of school. So they were going to be a bit more lenient, I think. Mm. And that probably did benefit me, but what it also did is caused me to put so much pressure on myself and work super hard, which I still do now.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
I think these things that you learn from a young age, how do we cope? How do I keep up with everybody else? I think I put a lot of pressure on myself to keep up in the way of work when my body is not on that vibe lots of the time. And I forget that.
Right.
Mm.
So it's like you don't maybe give yourself enough grace to, I guess, rest and recover when you should.
I'm getting better.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're on the journey.
She's learning.
Yeah, I mean, that must be a tough thing, especially when you're, you know, very ambitious and doing lots of things and working with lots of people. There's, I think anyone who runs their own business, it's like there's always more to do.
Oh, it never ends. And the amount of input you put in is how much your business grows.
Mm.
So I always feel like there's things to be doing, which is incredible. And how blessed and lucky am I? But equally, it can be at my own detriment. So I'm having to put strong boundaries in place right now.
Okay.
Which is good.
Yeah. I mean, that's always good to have with anybody, but especially as a business owner.
Yeah.
What I find really interesting is you said you had to grow up kind of a lot faster. So mentally, you were dealing with more than what people your age would have been.
Or probably ever will.
Or ever will.
Yeah.
That's very true.
Which is so, I feel so blessed, as well as I wouldn't probably wish this on anybody.
Mm.
In terms of the physical setbacks, how at risk you are to life, the worry, the fear for the future, all of these themes that come up time and time again. But I feel lucky that I now have the tools and mindset to deal with that.
Mm. This podcast is all about people in the stickiness of making decisions. When you're thinking about the decisions that you have to make, do you think they differ now from other people's, or are you still like, you know, thinking about the steps that society has told us? Are you on the vibe of like...
Oh, 100%. I think they differ to other people's.
Mm.
Like, for instance, after we record this today, I've blocked out 2 hours to go and sit on the sofa and work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's just something I've already put into my calendar and I know that's happening. As well as the hour before, I wasn't talking. So it's incorporating things that you know are going to help your health, you know are going to help your life, but you're doing it in a way that's now trying to like propel you forward rather than draw you back, because you're trying to appear like everybody else, which I now know and hold in my truth that I don't want to be like anyone else anymore. But when I was younger, that was something that I desperately wanted to be.
I wonder if we all get to that. I feel like I'm starting to get to that in my 30s. And I imagine that the older people get, the more they kind of step into... Yeah. You know, their truth, mm-hmm. if that's the right language, like their own, I guess, their most wholesome, honest version of themselves.
Mm.
And that's what ultimately you're helping women do, right, through your work.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel as I say, I feel so lucky that I get to help people in make choices, make decisions, honour their body, honour their health in a way that's in alignment to them and nobody else.
Mm.
I think we put other people before ourselves, just in general in life anyway, but especially when it comes to our health. You know, we're scared of what other people might say. We're embarrassed. You know, people might think we're a burden. It's all of these themes. We feel guilty that we have to cancel plans. It's all of these things that come up time and time again.
Mm. That's very true. And it's also the society that we live in, right? Is that there's almost like a toxic health culture, which is that when, and you know, people have probably spoken about this far more eloquently than I will, but that the idea of rest, you know, a quiet day at the weekend, and I'm so guilty of this, my quiet day might be that I actually go to the gym and I lift weights for a few hours, and then I come home and I eat something nice, and then I'm probably going to go for a walk. It might be with a friend, it might be on my own, have a little coffee, and then I'll come back, I might do a little bit of work, and then I'll watch something. And actually, when you look at that on paper, you're like, that's not really a quiet day.
No.
At all.
That's not a quiet day. And don't worry, I do that as well. I'm like, yeah, I have a chill day. That means get up, you know, read my book in the morning. Then I go and do some exercise if I can. Then I come back and I'm maybe going to see a friend at, yeah, in the afternoon, then I come back, then I've got something on in the evening. Why do why do we do it to ourselves? I think everybody experiences that. Mm. And it is probably that toxic productivity that we see presented to us online. It's like, why don't you habit stack? And whilst you're brushing your teeth, listen to your affirmations. And whilst you're on the loo, you know, read a book. And so you're constantly thinking, I should be doing more. When actually we're human beings, not human doings.
I love that.
When you're working with women, how do you start to balance or help them find balance? Because so many people listening to this will be like, yeah, well, you know, I understand the need for rest, but also they look at their weekends and they're like, this is the 2 days off that they have a week for most people.
Yeah.
And they haven't maybe gone to the gym in the week because meetings have run over or whatever, they've been busy. And you do try and like stack everything in. For anyone listening who feels like that, what do you think are like the first steps for people to think about when they're trying to find more balance, I guess?
I always say, go back to what you used to like doing as a child. This is a really, really good one. So go back to the things that used to light you up as a child. Light you up, not you feel like you should be doing. So for me, it might be, I used to love baking.
Okay.
I used to love creating. So anything, making a card, like, you know, whatever it might be, just doing something creative. So you would pick three things from what you used to like doing as a child, whether it was music, whether you're playing your favorite song. Start from there. Because you will be filling up your creative cup and your soul cup more than you know by doing the three things that you're probably bashing down on the to-do list.
That's interesting. God, so yours is baking. What other things have you got?
I used to love baking and still I'm trying to integrate it now. Dancing, singing, it was all the things that I used to love doing. And now I've started to incorporate it back into my life and I'm feeling so much more balanced for it. I think when we move through adulthood, our late 20s into our early 30s, let's be honest, the most important thing to us at this stage is career, income, because we need to survive. And that sometimes takes priority. And I think we lose sight of that balance. And we neglect probably the things that we used to love doing because nobody else is doing it anymore and it's all a bit icky and you forget that that's what younger you used to love doing.
Icky is so funny because Zoe, who came on the podcast, she's amazing.
Yeah.
But she does this thing in like somatic dance.
Yeah.
Which is like she dances around her kitchen and listens to songs and she puts it on Instagram. And it's so funny because she said she really had to like climb Cringe Mountain for that. Because it's almost like the idea of play. When you're an adult, play is like wasted time. Whereas when you're a child, it's like, we need to do something with the kid.
Yeah.
Oh, well, they should play. That's a great use of time.
Well, this is what I'm saying. Go back to your inner child. Go back to your childhood self. What did you love doing?
Oh my God. I was actually thinking that and I was like, oh, I can't even. I liked playing Sims. I'd just Perfect. Be fucking playing Sims for hours.
Perfect.
Do you know other weird, this is so embarrassing. But I also used to, like singing and I thought I was quite good.
Okay.
Objectively, I wasn't. I actually had singing lessons at school and they were like, you're not going to pass many grades on this. Maybe you should dip out. Unkind, but true. And sometimes I would like just putting on like old songs on YouTube with sing-along lyrics.
That's quite good.
Yeah. I actually did it. I haven't done it for many years, but sometimes when my husband's away, I do slip into it.
Come on.
And I'll be putting on like something from like Coyote Ugly.
Yes.
And I'm singing Can't Fight the Moonlight.
Perfect.
Completely out of tune. It has to be raised to the point that I can't hear my own voice because that's when you merge with the song and you're like, I'm fantastic.
Stunning. I think we need to get back on that for you.
Do you think?
Yeah.
I'm very embarrassed of my neighbours. I used to do it when I drove a lot. That was my thing. I'd drive back from uni back to my house and I'd still like sing Adele full pelt because it turns out it feels amazing.
I did it the other day.
Did you?
Yeah. Doors open. I'm sure the neighbours are in the garden. I don't care.
I love that.
It's got to be done.
It's also something like about self-expression and movement and like the physicality of it. Like I think, you know, we're all suffering from like tight shoulders and like then we're like, oh, we have to go to the gym and do these stretches for, you know, an hour before we work out. And sometimes it's like there's this need for a release from your body in like a fun way.
And I found out the other day, we're the only mammals that don't suffer from something called zoocosis. Do you know what that is?
No.
Neither did I. So zoocosis is, you know, when you put an animal in a zoo and out of its natural habitat and they get very sad. They develop, you know, lots of spots and kind of warts and skin damages. And we are mammals, essentially. And we're in this habitat, in this environment, the city, where we lose sight of our natural habitat, which will be probably where, you know, lots of us feel safe and grounded and energetically aligned, is by nature, by greenery, by water, whatever it might be. And so I think it's really important that we give ourselves bits, moments of fun, moments of joy, moments of pleasure that otherwise we forget about because we're in this environment that probably we wouldn't otherwise be in.
God, I would argue we might with zookosis.
Zookosis. I hope I'm saying that right.
I think that maybe we do, but
that's
we don't
what I'm saying.
It.
And so yeah. I've recognised it now. You need to just implant little moments of joy. Childhood joy.
I always say to people, and you know, anyone who follows on TikTok will have seen this, that I think a lot of us are desperately yearning to move to the countryside and raise goats. Like, that is my...
Raise goats?
Raise goats.
Interesting.
Or chickens.
Okay.
Or sheep. I'm actually not... I don't discriminate.
I don't think I would go down goats. Do you know why?
Why?
I like eggs.
Okay.
Chickens.
You can have both.
Yeah, that's true.
Goats for fun.
That's true.
And eggs.
Yeah.
Chickens for eggs.
Would the goat just be a pet?
The goat would just be a pet. Yeah, I mean, I'm not eating it, you monster.
Do some people eat goats?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, no.
Yeah,
just for pet.
Not this girl, though. I'm a big fan. But, and, you know, people leaving the city and going out to the countryside. Obviously, we had Monica on who talked about her cabins. Like, I think people are desperately wanting connection to nature.
Boom.
I'm going to call this a zoo. Maybe we need to come up. It's like zookosis.
Zookosis.
Syndrome.
I just really hope it is called zookosis. I think it is.
Well, if it's not, then you've just coined a new term. And
she's doubting herself, which is not weird.
That's even better if you've coined a new term. Yeah. With the people you work with, are they a similar kind of age to you?
Yeah, so predominantly it's like from the age of about 20 to 35, 40, I would say.
So from a weird year's perspective, I'm thinking, the big things that I'm always thinking about is career.
Yeah.
You've obviously made a massive shift of that. You went, corporate life did not work for me, work for my body, work for my mind, whatever. And then you've made a shift into something that's more flexible. What other big things coming up are you like toying with now?
I guess whether or not London's right for me, right for my body, right for my health. I often think like, wow, it's amazing. I've got my doctor literally at the end of the road, got my pharmacy, got all my hospitals. I have 3 different NHS hospitals in London and have always done. So access-wise, it's incredible. Can I keep up with the pace of this place? No, I can't. Do I spend a lot of time at home? Yes, I do. So I am a homebody. I love being at home. I love cooking, you know. So I guess I need to kind of work out if it's feeding my soul. But that's really hard to do when life moves pretty quick. You never sit down to think about it. And then suddenly time's moving on. Money is a massive factor. Can you afford to do all these things? And time, energy, and money are 3 of the biggest drains of mine right now, I would say. And as life is becoming more busy and commitments, and it's incredible people are getting married and you're being invited to the weddings and Hindus, it is an added stress. I think I get stressed that I'm not going to be well enough for them. And that's just something that you have to kind of prep for in a weird way. So I guess that's a decision in terms of it's hard to wait till the last minute to decide what you're doing every weekend. But then by accepting all these things, it's quite suffocating in an amazing way. And how lucky are we all to be invited to great things. But when you live with chronic conditions, I think it adds that extra layer of worry.
That does feel like a learning, though, that all of us, I think, are trying to work out, whether it's because of, you know, health conditions, whether it's because of mental health conditions, or even just like the reality of there is always something more that you can be doing.
Yeah.
Like, as we said before, it is that kind of constant balance of supporting other people and being there for their events, but also recognizing, I mean, it sounds like you have an amazing ability to recognize what your body needs and to regulate and change your life as needed.
It is hard though. And I think everyone must struggle with this is if we're tired, we sleep. If we're hungry, we eat food. But I think when the triggers, the alarm bells, the signs are sometimes very small and hidden and then become huge the next day. That's when, and then you eat yourself up and you're like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have done this. It's to a whole another level, but everybody gets it. You know, if you stay out late, you know, having one too many drinks, I shouldn't have stayed out so late and now I feel like this. Mm. And it's the same with chronic illnesses. Every action, there's a reaction. Whether it's good, whether it's bad, every choice, there's a reaction.
Mm.
So, and it is the same. It's the same with everyone in life.
Yeah.
Every choice you make has the ability to enhance your life or deplete it. And that's when you're like, wow, I do have some control here.
That's so true. And also trying to work out, I guess, sometimes whether the things that you're engaging with are actually things that you want to engage with, or whether you're doing it because of pressures of...
Yeah, people-pleasing.
Yeah, people-pleasing. Do you think you're a people-pleaser?
No.
I love that. Do you know how few people have just been like, no.
I'm not a people-pleaser. Never have been. No. It's not something I've ever been. I don't know why, but it's not in my nature. I'm very... All my friends will tell you I'm not a people-pleaser just because I know what I what's right for my body, what's not.
Yeah.
So I'll probably never really do something if I know it's going to make me drained, tired.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
You're not going to sacrifice yourself for it.
No, whereas I sense. Probably would have in the past. Whereas now, towards the end of my 20s, I would say I'm good at not people pleasing, but if there was a situation where I was going to feel uncomfortable or be worried that I was going to be put in a position where it could affect my health in any sort of way, whatever that might be, I would always voice it probably to the host and be like, look, this is how I'm feeling. I want to be super open and honest with you. And then they'll reply. But I don't fear that anymore, whereas I used to fear that by me being honest, they would get annoyed, which is never the case.
Mm.
So I think it's that self-development that you realise if there's something that's going to affect you emotionally or mentally or physically, if you put that to a friend, if you put that to somebody that cares for you, if they have a problem, that is their problem.
Mm.
And it is your life, so you're going to need to live it in your own way.
Completely. I sometimes find that fear, I think I'm also quite a straight-talking person and probably not much of a people pleaser. My husband will be like, she doesn't please anyone. I think I can relate more to your side of not being willing to, you know, put yourself into an uncomfortable or a situation which is damaging to make other people happy. I don't know, I feel like a lot of women especially, it's a bit of a trait of ours to do that.
I know. I think it's, as you say, it's probably so systemic. It's so ingrained in us. It's what we've watched. It's what we've learned.
Mm.
And I think we're all kind of realizing now we don't need to be that way.
Do we not?
No.
We don't. And that's what your coaching is about, I guess. Yeah. Helping people uncover more confidence.
More confidence, more acceptance, more love for themselves, and to realise that we don't need to be a carbon copy of anybody else. Nobody is. But I think with illness, there is that extra added element of I am different. And it's unpacking that and working out why we're going to shine so bright.
Mm, I love that. Do you think we also glorify resilience or, you know, the grind too much?
Yeah, when you say glorify resilience, what do you mean?
I guess I think about it in that sense of people saying like, well, you have to bounce back. You've got to get back out there, pick yourself up. It feels sometimes like you can get hit over the head by both sides of like, yeah, having to keep going, but also trying to rest and replenish.
And I think that's where it's hard for anyone struggling with anything. For the people that feel like they can't keep going, and that is for totally valid reasons. And they don't want to get out of bed and they don't want to smile. They don't want to go to see their friend for a drink because, to be quite honest, getting out of bed was hard enough for them.
Mm.
For those people, that's where it's hard because then you're confronted by the other people that can get out of bed, that can do those things, that are choosing to, you know, shift towards a 1% kind of better a day mindset. And that's where it's hard. It's sort of, there's no middle ground. And especially when it comes from able-bodied people where they probably don't understand that, as going back to what we were saying earlier, chronic conditions are something that was going to be with you forever. Mm. So that resilience, that just kind of get up, get on with it, you've got nothing else to do, you can't whine about it. And I think that is where people struggle, because they don't want to burden other people with their problems. That's what I hear all the time. Do you want to burden other people? So they then push through, overexert themselves, and then their health flares up.
Mm.
And it's the same with mental health. So I think that resilience piece is it's a tricky one.
What's the solution, do you think, from an internal point of view?
That's interesting. It's really hard to know. I do a lot of posts on Instagram about what not to say to somebody with a chronic illness. And people don't realise they're doing it from a very kind place. But I think people don't realise that when you are in a position of struggle, whatever that might be, saying things when you probably don't have an experience of said struggle is particularly challenging for the person on the receiving end. So saying things like, but you don't look sick, and, you know, you're too young to be sick, and have you tried this and that, unsolicited advice, it's really challenging for the people that are on the other side, on that lower side of the scale. Whereas when you're on the higher side of the scale, it's easy to throw away kind of comments to kind of patch up what you think the problem is.
Mm.
And solution to resilience, I'm unsure, because resilience is something that can be built again, but it depends how bad people's pain is. And yeah, that's a really hard thing to decipher.
Well, I guess I was thinking what the thing you need to ask yourself, because to anyone listening to this, I think they'll be treading a tightrope of doing more versus, you know, finding that balance. And do you have any like kind of rituals that you have on checking in
with yourself?
Yeah,
100%. Every single morning, I journal.
Do you?
Yeah, every single morning. And that's not me just journaling, asking myself random questions. I ask, how am I feeling in my body? How am I feeling in my mind? How are my emotions today? What may have caused my emotions to be feeling like this? And you're basically body checking to see, how does my day look? How does my body look today? What do I need more of? What should I rearrange? And I think that in itself is you holding yourself accountable to your body. And that resilience is, if you go through life kind of blinded to the external forces, it can be really hard to know how you're feeling just in general.
Mm.
If you just wake up, feel bad, go to work, come back, go to bed, you have no time to check in with yourself, to check in with your body. And I think that's one of the easiest ways and free ways to start that resilience journey.
I actually love that. I think that's something that I'm going to take, because I'm such a sucker for planning out when I'm going to go to the gym in the week. I'll always be like, it's going to be here, here and here. And then often I get to that day and it's like, I've got problems with my knees and my back and stuff, and I'll like push through it even though, because I've put that time in, even though in reality I know I'd be better to like listen to my body and go and do yoga or something much more gentle.
But I think that's the thing, isn't it? Where we put it into our calendar, and then if it gets to it and we really don't feel like doing it, everyone feels a bit like a failure.
Completely.
They don't do the thing that they said they were going to do. But actually, if you reframe that and you go, but what can I do to support my body in this moment? That's not going to the gym. And that's reframing it. And then you're getting whatever that thing is done that you wanted to tick off.
Mm.
And it is that self, you know, that sense of self-achievement and self-compassion that you're then giving yourself.
God, I love that so much. Instead of just rigidly following a plan, asking yourself, yeah, what can I do to support my body in the time that I have this day?
Mm.
I love that.
Whether it's a meditation, whether it's breath work, getting in a bath, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be, and again, social media plays a huge role in this. We see online all of these things like, hustle harder, work harder, set your alarm for 6 a.m. If you're not doing that, it's like, it's so all is almost screaming at us every day that we, if we don't commit and go to the gym, then we're not on track to become this incredible version of ourselves.
Mm.
Again, human being, not human doing. So I think it's that taking ourselves back to being really in tune with our body, not how other people are living their lives.
Yeah, comparison doesn't fucking make anyone happy.
No.
In my view. I want to go into, I asked this a couple of questions out to our listeners.
Mm.
And there's just two that stood out to me. One is, I guess, more of a statement. And one is an experience that I guess they're kind of looking for a little bit of advice, maybe. So this is a woman who's 33. Mm-hmm. And she said, I got diagnosed with endometriosis 2 years ago. I never thought I wanted kids, but now it's looking like it could be harder to if I change my mind and choose to have them, and that I would need to move faster and make preparations earlier in order to make that choice. It's throwing me into a lot of confusion. I'm not sure which way I want to go, but there's a lot of pressure with this new reality that it could be harder to have a child, and now I'm lost on what I feel and the pressure from timings.
So she's looking for advice.
I think so.
So timing-wise, my advice would be always go and now, before you even want to do the thing, whether it's have a baby, get the answers that you want. With the NHS especially, there's a lot of waiting times. There's a lot of slow progress. And I think if you prep and plan early, say she doesn't want to have babies for 5 years, but if you've got the answers, that alleviates so much of the worry and the confusion, because the answers are there. You know what you're working with.
Mm.
And I think so much of, especially getting a diagnosis, and I'm so sorry to hear that, it's a lot to handle. And emotionally, it's tough because your whole identity has changed. So you think to the person that you were before, and now you've got the diagnosis, and it can be really, really hard to adjust. And the emotions are everywhere. One of the best things that you can do, I think, for your emotions is get answers that you need. So you stop the rumination, you stop the spiraling.
God, that's so real, isn't it? Information and, yeah, and I guess that's probably, it feels like it's very deeply ingrained in the journey you've had, is that only with the knowledge of the things going on in your body are you able to live the life that you're able to, because you can monitor and understand and check in.
I always say that worrying and spiraling and thinking the sort of what ifs is like suffering in your imagination. You're suffering twice because you don't know. If you don't have the answers, you can create all of these scenarios. That's anxiety, that's worry. But they're not typically and necessarily true until you've got the answers. And maybe you get one answer from one doctor that says this. And if you're not quite sure about it, go and get another opinion.
Mm.
There's nothing wrong with that, but once you've got the facts, that's when you can kind of stand strong in your truth that you've done everything that you can and controlled everything that you can in that situation.
I love that. I think that's really useful advice. So somebody had written into your Instagram, actually. You'd asked, how has illness shaped your life and decision making? And they said, every decision I make now is based on how it will affect my body.
Couldn't agree with that more.
Mm.
Every action has a reaction. So it's so true. And it's true for everybody. But I think when you live with illness, you know in the back of your head, the choices that you make have such an impact on how you feel the next day, the next week, the next month. What you're feeding yourself, how much sleep you're getting, how much water you're drinking, who you surround yourself with, how much energy you're draining from your social battery. All of these things have an impact on how you feel, how you talk to yourself. It's wild, but when you have illness, it's kind of tenfold.
Yeah.
So it's so true what she said. So thanks for sharing that. But there are ways that you can feel less heavy within it. But I think it takes time.
Mm. It honestly, from this chat, it really makes me think, like, firstly, just how like wise you are and like how thought through things are. Because I think all this stuff is like where I'm starting to get to it. I mean, I'm not much older than you, like 5 or so years, but less than that.
You didn't need to put that in there.
Take that out. But I think it's where a lot of people are getting to, of like taking control and being conscious and making decisions. And for loads of us, you know, speaking on my behalf here and some friends,
yeah,
we partied the whole way through our
20s. Yeah.
Like, didn't even consider any of this stuff of how it's shaping your body.
Mm.
And for all of, like, you know, the struggle that you have, this kind of mindset, and for you to be taking that out to people who are experiencing chronic illness themselves, but also the wider message. It's like, God, if we were having these conversations when, you know, we were 20, just being conscious, not necessarily always living the perfect healthy life,
no,
but just being aware of, yeah, that balance of give and take. And, you know, you borrow, I love that expression of, like, when you've been out and got really pissed, it's like, oh, I borrowed a little bit of tomorrow's fun,
yeah,
today. And it is that, it's like finding that kind of constant monitoring and a level of comfort, I guess.
Yeah, 100%. And also with that, it's knowing that you have a choice. So going back to what we're saying about choices, I'm choosing to stay out. I didn't have to stay out. I chose to stay out because I was having fun with my friends at the moment. So when you think about it like that, it's like, I do have a choice in it. It's not, I'm not being controlled every second by my health, by my illness. But I'm saying, and this is the this is why the language that we use is so important, is I chose to stay out and have fun with my friends, which then meant I was tired and, you know, a bit run down the next morning, instead of I had to stay out. Because then you're giving power to not your choice.
And also, maybe people are listening to this and they have been saying recently, like, oh, you know, they're going for a coffee the next day and they're saying, like, oh yeah, I had to stay out because it was such and such a birthday, or I had to do this. Maybe it is just a little bit of a wake up of, if you're using that language, then maybe you do need to go back to ownership of your choices,
yeah,
and be a little bit less of a people pleaser, maybe.
Definitely.
Maybe that's just the trick. Please less people.
Please yourself.
Please yourself.
Got one life.
Yeah.
Got one life. It's not going to be, you know, it's not forever.
Mm.
And I always think, you know, will I be content? Will I be happy if I'm always putting other people's needs, rather than people pleasing, it's other people's needs and desires before my own.
Mm. And also, I think sometimes, especially as women, we can over egg the, like, other people's needs and how much they actually need something.
Yeah.
I think we can be such, like, monitors and caregivers that actually something that you'll fret about of, like, oh, you know, you didn't get to the friend's party at exactly the right time. I've got to be there when it starts because I don't want them to be feel left out, or like that no one's coming or whatever. And you can build those things up in your mind, and then you get there and you're like, they're totally fine.
Yeah.
Actually, no one's thinking about what you're doing as much as you are.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's so true.
Pay less attention.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to finish up with my favourite section,
ooh,
which is yes or mess. I feel like I need to make a little jingle that goes into yes or mess.
So keen, should we make it?
Yeah. Go on then.
Okay.
The next section is yes or mess.
Dun, 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 dun.
Why is that like dun, 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 dun?
Yeah, that's a bad song.
I feel like it's a cowboy song. Who knows? Someone can find it. So yes or mess. I'm going to ask you five rapid fire questions / statements.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're into it, say yes. If you're like, no, that's absolutely stupid,
then you say mess. Mess. Got you.
You can expand if you want to, but let's see how we go.
Okay.
Tough love coaching.
Mess.
Having a 5-year plan.
Mess.
Powering through.
Mess.
Struggle gives you a deeper understanding of yourself.
Yeah.
And rest days.
Yeah.
Times 100.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, I feel like I need to bake in more rest days, just in general.
It doesn't need to be a whole day.
All right.
A few hours.
Don't shame me.
Yeah. You can just, if you do it regularly, you don't need the day of it.
What do you do when your rest days, though? Reading a book?
Yeah.
Quite restful, isn't it?
I'm normally on my bed, which I call the soft office.
Love that.
Yeah. So, whatever.
Yeah.
Reading. Face mask. I'm normally plugged into my ventilator, actually, when I rest.
Hmm.
So, which is what I sleep with at night. So, recharging. I always think I'm recharging my energy so I can go back out into the world, yeah, with enough energy to survive.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for being here. I think it's going to be really useful and eye-opening and honestly inspirational for people. I'm like, I'm going to go home and listen to it a few times.
It was honestly so much fun, Lily. Thanks so much for having
me. Thank you for being here.